I'm called Koheleth. Means teacher or preacher. And when I got it written down in the book, somebody decided to give it a Greek name. So they called it Ecclesiastes. And I'm here to set the record straight. That song, that Pete Seeger fella, he added that last line. Changed the whole meaning. It's not what I meant at all. Seems to suggest that if you do something, you can change things in some kind of big way. That's not what the song means. Everything has its season. It's going to happen, whether you want it to or not. It's all part of God's plan. And who knows the mind of God? All this striving, all this fussing about, it's all vanity. Nothing but vanity. It's all it is. Oh, you have these kings and these emperors. They've got this gold and this silver that they collect. They build these palaces and temples, these statues and monuments. They got land and workers. They got scribes to record their greatness and many others to do their bidding. They got great armies, acquire more land, more gold, more people. They think what they do is going to last forever. Ha! Some greater king comes along, takes it all away, knocks down all the temples and all the fine buildings, take the people somewhere else. I've seen it. I've seen it many and many a time. Look what happened to Solomon. He builds this great big kingdom. Builds this great temple. But what happens? After he goes, his son comes along. Foolish man. Foolish, foolish, foolish. The result of all his foolishness, the kingdom breaks up. And then the Assyrians come, and they take away part of the kingdom. Then the Babylonians come, and they take away the rest of it, and destroy the temple, and take away the people. It's all vanity. Some fool of a successor ruins it all. So what does it all mean in the end? All this striving over worldly goods and wealth. The lover of such things is never really satisfied. He always needs more. So where's the pleasure in that? And because none can know the mind of God, who is to say that some calamity might come along and befall them? They lose all that they have. All this driving and work and everything else, it's all vanity. And what about justice? It is said that God will reward the righteous and punish the wicked. A lot of our prophets have said that. But I have seen the righteous oppressed, and I have seen the wicked thrive. Yet all are destined to die in the end, just like all the other animals. Look what happened to Job. This fella got all these nice things. He's pious. He fears God. Good thing to fear God. He has this nice family, flocks, friends. And suddenly, it's all gone. Fire comes, burns the house where all his children are. Thieves come and take away his flocks, His health collapses. His friends try to come and tell him, only pray to God and find out what you did wrong and ask forgiveness and it will all be right again. But Job knows better than that. I've done nothing wrong. So he asked God, why? Why has all this happened to me? What did I do, O God? And he asks and he asks and he asks. And finally, God comes to him and he says, who are you to question me? That's what he says. He never answers his question. Job has no right to know the mind of God. Only God knows what that is. Oh, yes. God will judge. He does judge. But you never know when that judgment will happen and in what way. We do not know such things. And you try to figure it out, and it's all vanity again. Vanity and vanity. Well, what about wisdom? Wisdom is a good thing, is it not? We Hebrews make a big deal out of wisdom. We've written a lot of things about it. I want you to listen now. I want you to listen to this. It's one of our proverbs about wisdom.
Wisdom has built her house. She has set up its seven pillars. She has prepared her meat and mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her servants, and she calls from the highest point of the city, let all who are simple come to my house. To those who have no sense, she says, come, eat my food, and drink the wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways, and live and walk in the way of insight. Whoever corrects a scoffer wins abuse. Whoever rebukes the wicked gets hurt. A scoffer who is rebuked will hate only you. Rebuke the wise, and they will love you. Instruct the wise, and they will become wiser still. Teach the righteous, and they will add to their learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For by me your days will be multiplied, and years will be added to your life. If you are wise, your wisdom will reward you. If you scoff, you alone will suffer.
Pretty, ain't it? Well, I will say this. It's better to be wise than be foolish. The foolish lose everything that they have. People take advantage of them. They know not what's going to happen to them. Now, better to be wise than the ways of the world. You don't make foolish mistakes and do foolish things. Beyond that, it's all nonsense. For by me your days will be multiplied and years added to your life. If you are wise, your wisdom will reward you. If you scoff, you alone will suffer. But just try and share your wisdom and see what happens. Look what happened to Jeremiah. He tried to share his wisdom. Did they listen to him? No, they threw him into a cistern. Twice. And then he had to run for his life. Better not to display your wisdom in front of fools. They won't listen, and you will be hurt. You will be punished for seeming to be wise. Better to be a little wise, but not too much. And if you must be evil, better to be a little evil, but not too much. For you to see the end of all your striving, of all your efforts, you would despair. for it is all vanity. And those who can say the future, who say this will happen or that will happen, are not wise but foolish. For all is in the hands of God, and what mortal man can know that? So, in the end, go eat your bread with enjoyment and drink your wine with a merry heart. For God has long ago approved what you do. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that are given to you under the sun. Because that is your portion in life. And in your toil at which you toil under the sun. Whatever your hands find to do, do it with your might. For there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. Your King James, and he wrote this up in his Bible, use the words, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Good man, that James Phillip. That's my philosophy, too. Enjoy your days. Take pleasure in what you are doing. Not because it's going to create some great change down the way, but because it is good to do. Stay in the present. Enjoy your food, enjoy your drink. If you are young, enjoy your youth, because it will not stay. That is the message that I give you. Take heed. Not that anybody will take heed. They never have. But that is the message I leave you with. I'm here, as I said, to set the record straight. And now I have done so. And that is Ecclesiastes. I quite like Ecclesiastes. It's one of my favorite books in the Hebrew Bible. And for two reasons. First of all, he's a dissenting voice. Among the prophets, the Proverbs, the Psalms, and the narratives of the Hebrew Bible, his is the voice of the skeptic. He questions established wisdom. How this book even got included in that testament is an interesting story in itself. If you read Ecclesiastes, the opening chapters, it sounds like it is Solomon who is speaking, reflecting on his reign and the futility of all that he has gained. This was a common device in those days. You sound like one of the great kings or one of the prophets, you are likely to get included. And that's why he had got in there. It was quite controversial, actually, hundreds of years ago. It almost didn't get included at all until they said, well, these are the words of Solomon, so we have to include it. But Koheleth contributed his ideas hundreds of years after the time of Solomon. He lived somewhere between 300 and 500 BCE. It was at a time in Judea of some turmoil. It was after the Babylonian captivity. The leadership had returned from Babylon, but the people who had been left behind on the land were not overjoyed to see them come back, ready to take over. There were squabbles with their neighbors. Persia, who had released under King Cyrus, the Hebrews to go back to their land and help them build their temples even. Nonetheless, was keeping a very close eye on things. They appointed their governors. They watched over the high priests. So they were not as independent as perhaps they would have liked to have been. There were some questions arising as to what it really meant to be Hebrew or Jewish in those days. There was a great deal of controversy, and that controversy was to get worse in the centuries to come. So it is not surprising that we find a skeptic like Ecclesiastes preaching his message to those who would listen. One of the interesting things about Judaism in those days, there was no belief in an afterlife as we know it, or as we tend to think of it. There was no heaven and hell in Hebrew scripture. It did not actually come into the Hebrew tradition until, at the earliest, the 2nd century BCE. So you see now where Ecclesiastes' thinking is going. He's saying, well, there's no justice in this world, and there's not going to be any justice afterwards either. Ecclesiastes has a remarkably modern ring to it. At least I think it does. His cynicism about the world and his prescription to live as pleasantly as possible in the present strikes a sympathetic chord in many people and prompts a range of possible responses. First of all, you may choose to disagree with Ecclesiastes fundamentally. No matter how bad things look, they will get better. A sort of uncritically optimistic view of the future. This used to be a very Unitarian view up until the Second World War. Things are getting bigger and better. The idea of progress forever upwards was a very common theme. Unitarians then, and to some extent now, are accused of being overly optimistic about the future of the world. Well, there are not too many people who hold to that belief in its uncritical form today. There's another possible response. You agree with Ecclesiastes' views and sink into existential despair. Well, that's not one that we particularly like to promulgate, but it is a possible response. A third one, perhaps a much more common response, is to agree with Ecclesiastes' view of the world, including our own inability to bring about significant change. Accept his proposition to eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. One of the things that's attractive about this is that he urges us to live in the present. There's a resonance of that in Buddhism and in some other Eastern philosophies. And sometimes we forget that the present is important too. Too often in our daily lives, we think about the future, what we're trying to strive for or trying to bring about. Or we're mired in the past with our past problems and issues. And we forget to live in the present, to take some pleasure in our present lives on a day-to-day basis. And when we work, whether it be for money or volunteer work or whatever it is, we cannot tell whether this work will bear fruit in the end. We cannot tell what it may lead to in terms of society. But we can choose to enjoy it for its own sake, which is what Ecclesiastes is arguing for. We need to pay attention to our own needs and not totally be subject to the pressures around us. That, to me, is one of the attractive features of Ecclesiastes. There is another option, another way to respond, and that is to agree with Ecclesiastes' view of the world, but not about what comes afterwards. If we cannot find justice in this world, according to many, maybe we'll find it in the next. The rewards and punishments apportioned by God after death, it is believed by many, will restore the justice that the world seems to lack. That's a common feature of much of Christianity, Islam, and the Baha'is, among others. And finally, there is another broad category of responses where we might agree mostly with Ecclesiastes, in his views about the world, but not to the extent that human action does not make a difference. What we choose to do, in some ways, does matter. This, I think, is our common Unitarian stance today. Last week at the North Shore Church, Philip Heumann gave a sermon, and included in that sermon were two quotes, which I borrowed from him. He was gracious enough to send them to me. And it expresses this point of view quite well, I thought. The first is from Summer Meditations by Vaclav Havel. Like a number of other world leaders in recent times, he spent years in prison under an oppressive political regime before becoming president of the Czech Republic. After his retirement, and until a few days before his death, just this past year, he devoted his energies to organizations working for human rights. This is a quotation from some of his writing. If I talk about my notion of the kind of values and ideas I wish to struggle for, this is not to say that I am entertaining the naive hope that this struggle may one day be over. Evil will remain with us, and humankind will not stop destroying the world. I have few illusions. But I feel a responsibility to work towards the things I consider good and right. I don't know whether I'll be able to change certain things for the better or not at all. There is only one thing I will not concede, that it might be meaningless to strive in a good cause. The second quotation is from the words of Bonaro Overstreet, who died in 1985. He was a widely publicized psychologist and poet. This is what he had to say. You say the little efforts that I make will do no good. They never will prevail to tip the hovering scale where justice hangs in the balance. I don't think I ever thought they would. But I am prejudiced beyond debate in favor of my right to choose which side shall feel the stubborn ounces of my weight. Maybe, just maybe, the changes we help to bring about will produce a new direction for the human race. It's not that I have great faith that this will happen, but at least I have an abiding hope that it will. So maybe, just maybe, Pete Seeger's errant last line is not so far off after all. A time of peace. I swear, it's not too late. And so may it be. And now a time for reflection. Consider these words. What is your response to the challenge of Ecclesiastes?